Welcome one and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 37. After my week off, we're back. And just for the record, I swear I tell you folks this ahead of time, but I was gone last weekend because I had a wedding to attend. And
yeah, I easily forget things.
The next time I'm gone will be for the same reason, and that happens in 7 weeks. So
everyone in New York just dying to throw their lives away.
I think that's a wonderful thing. It's just that apparently nobody I know wants to get married in New York City, so I always have to travel. And I mean, I obviously my friends. It's just kind of like I live in New York City. They live out in the middle of nowhere. And since college, I've been to the middle of nowhere more than they've been here. So there's that.
That's why Britain's more awesome than America, because you can just get on a train.
Well, I can get on a train. Even still, I mean, like, if you wanted to, like, my friends are looking into taking a train from Chicago to this part of town, and it's something like, I think, 17 hours.
Yeah, but which, like, yeah, 4 hours on the train and you're in Scotland or something.
You were both speaking, and one person said pizza, and that's all I really heard. So, I mean, before we, you know, get off too much on a tangent, I would like to introduce that we have Chad and Daniel this week.
Hello.
I'm giving you the silent treatment. I don't know if you caught that.
I was going to say,
take that, listeners.
I was going to say, I don't know. I mean, I guess the silent treatment works on a podcast since it's all speech, but it's just going to make, oh, he's probably playing StarCraft again with you, so this, that.
Oh, I'm done. I'm done with that.
And I guess we might as well start there. I know we kind of have this ban on it, but you've been playing in a tournament, and you've been having so much fun that do you want to kick us off with what you've been going through with that?
Well, the tournament's going great, actually. The guy that I was tied for first in our group with didn't show up to play the game that I had against him, so that was a walkover win, giving me sole position of first, so that's good, because he probably would have beaten me, maybe. It would have been close, because he was a Zerg. And
oh, yeah.
That gets
we
me.
Know how you love PvZ.
Which I still think stands for Plants vs. Zombies.
Protoss
but
vs. Zerg is broken, and that's all I'm going to say. It's just, it's fucked. It's fucked. I'm done.
But why is it so broken?
Because the way, this is just going to be Greek to you, but the way the larva inject mechanic works for Zerg makes it so that they can resupply impossibly quickly, such that if the Zerg plays perfectly and the Protoss player, yeah, basically the only way the Protoss player can win is if the Zerg screws up epically, or just doesn't scout you.
And Chad's mad because he happens to be the Protoss player.
Because, no, BattleNet hates me, okay? That ladder hates me. I played 8 games in a row versus Zerg yesterday. 8!
It knows.
It knows. It's just screwing with me. So then I said, I'm done. Enough. I've had enough. So then I wanted to play something happy, so I gave Wrecketeer a shot, because I bought that during the Steam sale, which we're 3 days in, and I've only bought 4 games, so
go. You make that sound like a little bit.
So, yeah, Wrecketeer is, it's like an RPG, it's with, like, bare-bones translation, all the voice work and everything's still in Japanese, it's just got English text and stuff. But it, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's like you run an item shop, but you don't have any items because, oh, that Wrecketeer, she's so forgetful. She's opening an item shop but didn't bring any items for it. Oh, no. What are you going to do, right? Which, by the way, we can chalk this up to another game made by a Japanese developer where the main character wakes up on a very important day, but they overslept.
Which one?
Because that's just a trope that...
Yeah, I know, that's why I was asking you which one. It seems to be that it's the RPG. I think it's like the number one RPG. Do you know which game had it first? Because I know Link to a Past starts that way as well, but I assume
Pokemon Gold starts that way.
Chrono Trigger starts that way.
Okay, we're not going to name every RPG that starts that way. We're going to be here
but,
a while.
So yeah, that happens. So I'm only probably 20 or 25 minutes into the game now, but you wake up and then her little fairy dude's chick is like, oh, you don't have items for your item shop, and we're opening today. So basically the whole game is based on you go out into dungeons and gather items for your item shop and fight stuff and everything. And then as you progress, like, you get more stuff for your shop, etc. So that's pretty cool. It's just so happy. Everything about that game is just adorable. And after losing 8 games in a row at StarCraft, you want something adorable.
Adorable. Aww.
What else? Oh, I played Solar 2 also, thanks to Steam. Which,
what
because of
that?
A certain other company's website's video where they take a look at a game that's, like, pretty quick.
Okay, you can say Giant Bomb's quicker. We don't have a... we have no problem with that.
Well, I don't want to give them any more free advertising. If they want me to keep advertising, they're going to have to pay for that shit. You hear that, Giant Bomb crew? With our vast listenership. So yeah, that, it's like... I'm trying to think of what it's like. It's like, you know how flow is basically... You kind of can't lose. You just go around and you grab stuff.
Yeah.
And you get bigger and then you can eat bigger stuff. So you start off as an asteroid and then, you grow into a bigger asteroid by hitting smaller asteroids and you get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you turn into a planet. So then you're a planet that has asteroids orbiting around it. Cause when you get close to an asteroid, it orbits you because you're a planet and you have gravity. I don't know. Science.
Science.
And, so yeah, there's that. And then you get enough, so yeah, you're a planet, you have asteroids orbiting you. The asteroids orbiting you can then hit other asteroids that are smaller than them to grow. And then you absorb the asteroids orbiting you to turn into a bigger planet. So then you keep growing and growing like that. And then you turn into a star. So then you're a star that has planets orbiting you, that has asteroids orbiting you, that can hit other asteroids to get bigger. And then that planet sucks up those asteroids to turn into a bigger planet. And then that other planet sucks that up. And it's like you turn into an entire freaking star system. It's so cool. And there's,
but it has no end in sight.
Oh, there's no real point to it. It's just fun. It's just the music's chill. It's super relaxing. And it's just like...
So it is like Flower and Autos, kind of.
Yeah, it's kind of, well, it's a, one of those artsy indie games, but I like those, so, yeah.
Yeah, they can be good times. Not that, I don't think we're going to cover this much in news, but I might as well mention it since you did, is that Limbo's coming to PSN sometime soon, I guess.
That's a good thing.
I will play that game again, for sure.
I was about to say, you both have different opinions on that, so we won't touch that.
Oh, that's a Chad game if there ever was one.
But it's not quirky Japanese.
No, but it is weird.
Fair enough.
And speaking of which, I meant to run out and get Shadows of the Damned, but I haven't done that yet. But that is a game I am going to enjoy. And I'm going to talk about it next week, and I am going to be biased as hell.
As long as you're honest with it. What about you, Daniel? How goes your adventure with L.A. Noire?
So I've actually been playing two games this week. I finished, for the most part, I finished Red Faction Armageddon. And I've gotten up to Vice in L.A. Noire, Disc 3, if you have the 360 version. I think I'm going to start with Red Faction Armageddon first. It's not Red Faction Guerrilla. And as far as I'm concerned, if I want to play Red Faction Guerrilla, I'll go and play Red Faction Guerrilla, and I'm glad it's not Red Faction Guerrilla. It's more of a linear corridor shooter, but they still give you plenty of opportunity to wreck shit, which is nice. The story's not great, it just works. There's nothing, like, it's still fun, like the gameplay, but it still doesn't really have anything else that's particularly good about it. And the best thing about this game is when you finish the story mode, you get New Game Plus, and you unlock this unicorn that vaporizes people. It, like, shoots rainbows out of its ass, and it vaporizes people, and it vaporizes buildings as well. And
I went from not being interested in this game at all to being supremely interested,
like,
in this game all of a sudden.
It's the exact copy of a separate weapon called the Plasma Beam, but it's so much better because it's a unicorn that, like... When you hold, the character's holding it, and when you fire it, he lifts up its tail, and it, like, its eyes go all googly and all over the place, and its mouth is, like, all over the place as it's moaning, and it farts out rainbows, and they make people explode, and it vaporizes buildings, which is amazing.
Yes, yes, it is. I think we need to see a video of this gun in action.
If you need to, want to know what it is, Mr. Toots, just type in Mr. Toots and you'll get either a Freddy Wong video, which is because Volition gave him the model to use in one of his videos. And, well, he uses all of his special effects magic to make people explode with the rainbow farts, or you'll get gameplay footage.
I'm not sure which one I would want more. I'm going to watch both of those.
It's a good game. It's not Red Faction Guerrilla, but again, I didn't want it to be Red Faction Guerrilla. And L.A. Noire, some of the writing makes no sense whatsoever, but I love...
Most of it.
But I love the atmosphere the game creates.
Yes, yes. I don't want to harp. I don't want to sound negative because I did enjoy the game. But it's not too hard to create an atmosphere when you pretty much just mimic a timepiece in history. It's not like they went out of their way to create this special time. They just transported LA from that time period forward.
I think that Cole Phelps as a character is very interesting as well.
Wow, you were probably the first person I've heard who said that. Why?
Because he lives in a time where there's sexual tensions between men and women. There's racial tensions between, obviously, the white people and the black people. And Cole Phelps is just a guy who's just trying to fight for what's right. He doesn't care whether they're male or female. He doesn't care what the color of their skin is. And
justice is blind, man.
It's very interesting to see how he reacts to the world around him.
See, I get that, and I think that's what they were trying to go for. I think in the eyes of a lot of people, though, especially in my eyes in particular, he comes off as bland in that way because no matter what, like, he has corrupt partners, he has a broken system, he's kind of like a sucker because he doesn't change with anything around him, and it's like, you know, everybody's taking advantage of him, and he does nothing to stand up for himself.
I can see
that. I'm assuming you got to the twist when you get with Vice.
No, I've only just started Vice. Effectively.
Okay, so I won't ruin that, but yeah.
I'll have to report back when I finish it. But yeah, the writing. I just don't see, like, when you say there are cases where you have two people who appear equally as suspect as another, and you have to interrogate them and then choose the right. Where you have to choose one of them. But then, afterwards, like, if you pick the wrong person, your captain scolds you for it, and it's like, if you knew who it was, why didn't you do it instead of asking me to do it, you know?
And I think he scolds you either way. I could be mistaken.
Really? Because, I don't know, it's just... Because, like...
And this is one of the things people complained about tonight, is that after a while you kind of realize that you're putting away people who are innocent, or you don't have enough evidence to put them away with, but you have to do it because the game mandates that the story progresses in such a fashion that even when you think, you know, I don't have enough evidence to convict this person, the game's like, you have to do it anyhow because we need to move forward. And especially with, you know, those set of cases, you begin to realize that there's something larger going on, but the game forces you to do the same case five or six times before saying, haha, you were right. There is somebody else behind it. And I'm like, yes, I could have told you this like three cases ago.
Because, I know, it just seemed... Like, strange how, like, there was one case, I think it was the, I don't know the names of any of the cases, hang on. There was one case like this, and both of the suspects had access to, like, a green jumpsuit with HM written on it. And it was like, hang on, this is a bit coincidental, isn't it? You know, and one person who had the brooch of the victim on him, and yet he seems to be innocent, and it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and then you have to convict one of them.
Yeah, and then, like, what happened was, is I interrogated both of them, and it got to a point, and one of them started making a break for it, and I was like, wait, what? Why did he let out the police station? So I had to chase him, and then the game was like, yeah, you need to convict this guy. And I was like, wait, what? What if I wanted to convict the other guy? You've just forced this thing on me that I don't want to do.
Yeah. Pretty much, because I think once they don't have evidence enough, and I think once like the child molester or the
that's the exact one I'm talking about.
Yeah,
And the wife's husband, he begged for it. And I was like, wow, this makes no sense. And it also suffers from the same problem that I always had with Phoenix Wright, where they would make a statement, and you have this piece of evidence to
contradict them.
And so you'll pick lie, you'll pick that piece of evidence, and the game will go, no, because you were supposed to pick this one, I'm going to say you're wrong now.
Yeah, and I realize why they do it to go forward, but I also hate the fact that like, you ask them a question, and if you get it wrong, you finish that line of questioning. And like, in real life, a cop wouldn't just say, okay, I got it wrong, so no more questioning you. It's like you continue on until you get what you need, not like, oh, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore.
And it's strange because the core gameplay, which is the interrogation and the solving the cases, is flawed, but I love the game. It's very strange.
I think to me it's because it's a very unique experience.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it has a lot of problems, and it, like I said, I think I would give it a 7 or so if I had to rate it. But I do recommend that everybody check it out, because it is one of those not once in a lifetime games, but it's going to be one of those genre changes where you're going to start seeing more games build on that foundation. And for a first effort, you know, it's kind of rough around the edges, but it has a lot of great ideas that I hope gets.
And if they do a sequel in any way, shape, or form, I think that the issues could be addressed fairly easily as well. So,
but as we'll find out when we get to the news, that may not be as easy as we see with certain circumstances. But we'll get to that in just a second. Have you been playing anything else?
Not really. I played. Star Wars Battlefront 2 on the Steam sale, and I remembered how awesome that game is. Other than that.
That reminds me, have you beat Arkham Asylum yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
And as for me, most of my week has been dedicated to the Uncharted 3 beta. I was a huge fan of Uncharted 2 multiplayer, even though, you know, it's like one of those games that really didn't need it. But it did end up working out well.
Well, I thought it was basic, but it was fun.
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't have to do anything special. It doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. That said, I still enjoy it, but I do have my share of problems with it. And it's basically the same problems I have with a lot of shooters this generation, is that it's trying to add in a lot of Call of Duty elements.
Oh, great.
Or, you know, they're trying to be fair to everybody, and it tends to kind of be broken in some fashions. The biggest issue I have right now, what they call the power plays, which are special.
Are they like the thing where you can all of a sudden lob like 3 grenades at once or something?
No, that's it. That's a perk.
All right.
That's another. But this is kind of like if like a team's losing by, you know, a certain amount. I don't know if it's a certain amount or whatever. It triggers what they call a power play, which is to give the other team a chance to come back. Which I wouldn't mind if it did it like once, but you can get. I've had up to 3 or 4 in a game.
Yeah.
And it varies. Like you'll have. There's one where it's like. One person on your team is marked as the VIP, and if he gets killed, the team gets three kills.
Huh.
Everybody on your team's marked on a map, so the other team knows where everybody on your team is. There's curse where the winning team can't differentiate between the good guys and their teammates.
It sounds like a good idea.
It sounds like a good idea if you do it once per match. The problem is like I said, I've gotten 3 or 4 of them in a game. Like marked man will come up, and then you know that team gets 3 kills every time they kill off VIP, and then like the double damage will come in where they get, you know, their weapons do double damage, and each of it's for like a minute. Granted, yes, you can kind of use some of these to your advantage. Like VIP, for instance, is actually, you know, like we started doing. What you do is you kind of lock your VIP up in a room. And everybody's going to try to come after him because he's marked on the map.
Yeah.
So you just kind of surround him, and as people come in, you just kind of shoot them down. And, you know, this builds up your kill count. But I still think the notion of having multiple power plays kind of unbalances the game. Either fix it where it's, you know, it doesn't happen as often, or maybe not make them as powerful.
It sounds like it's happened like once per team, per game.
Yeah, like I said, that would work, but having it happen multiple times is just annoying. And again, I say this because I'm usually on the other end of it, which is a good thing in some ways, but
I tell you what, by the sounds of it, it's a good job they didn't do a typical Sony beta with Uncharted 3.
Yeah. The other thing, the other things, like you mentioned before with the grenades, they have their perks and their, loadouts, like any game, which isn't so bad. You get, like most of them are just like you move faster, you reload faster, you have a bigger clip in your gun, and then you get like one special perk, like mine's is that after, like it's kind of like the kill streaks in Call of Duty, but it uses the medals you earn, which I actually prefer that system because, it rewards you for doing well.
Yeah.
And you don't, that is cumulative. So it's not like, oh, you have to get 14 medals in one life. It's like, oh, I got 14 medals. So, but yeah, you have to, get a certain amount of medals, and after that, you can activate it. Right now, I stack the RPG. So after like 14 medals, I can call it an RPG, and I get 2 shots with that.
Kind of sounds like the battle point system in Homefront.
I haven't played Homefront.
Like in Homefront, like forget doing things like completing objectives and getting kills, you get battle points, and then you have to spend those battle points on things like RPGs or vehicles or something.
Well, perhaps it's like that then. And I do, because it all ties in together, because the medals give you money, which allows you to buy stuff outside of the game and stuff like that, which is a cool system. I actually have no problem with the system because, you get one. It's not like Call of Duty where you can have, I haven't seen any of them, but you don't get anything. Like, I remember the first Call of Duty had the one where you can drop a grenade when you die.
Yeah.
Or gas stand or anything like that. It's usually just kind of like, you can disappear, you get an RPG, you get the 3 grenade ones, but you can only use it once. Stuff like that. And then they have what they call then you have a match perk, which is like something you buy before the start of a match, and it has one. It's a one-time use. You can only use it in that match, and I kind of just find those cheap because like if I forget to use it, I've lost like $30,000.
Oh.
So yeah. My other problem is that there's 2 maps in the beta, and one of the maps is really broken at the start of it, because they're trying to make it really cinematic.
Oh, the airplane one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're on the aircraft at the start, it's much easier for you to control that map because the other team has to come to you.
Great.
So yeah, what we do, and again, this is, if I'm on the aircraft, what we do is usually you kind of have 3 people in front and then 2 people and then 1 person at each door so that if they try to come, you can shoot, because they have to jump across like moving vehicles, which is a problem all of its own because like sometimes you can miss time a jump and fall to your death anyhow. And like one of them will leave you open because there's like no covering. So yeah, they have to come to us, and there's so much, you have the ground advantage and you have the non-movement advantage. So if you have it well covered, you can pretty much wipe out a team before they kind of get anything going. I mean, I think I've left there before when the score was like 18-8.
Is it such a problem where it's obvious within like 1 or 2 games?
Oh, I think it's obvious within the first game.
See, it makes you think that, like, did they test these? I mean, I know this is a beta test, but they've got to do. They must have done some testing beforehand.
I mean, I think what they thought is, like, it's a good idea, and like they would think, like, oh, maybe the people on the opposing team would just hide out and have them. But the thing is, it makes no sense for you to leave the plane to go chase people.
Yeah.
Because everybody else is moving vehicles and stuff like that, and then the spawning in that section is kind of weird because you can have enemies who spawn in the plane while your team's surrounding them, or you can have people spawn outside behind people in other trucks. So it's really weird, but
it'd be interesting to see what they do with that. I mean, they may just move the spawns, but
yeah, we shall see. And the second once after, I don't even know the time frame, but after a while it takes off and then it becomes a normal match, and then that isn't so bad. The stage isn't that special, but It's passable. Chateau is, it's okay. Other than that, I've been enjoying it. I mean, I'm actually pretty good at the Uncharted multiplayer, so that always counts for something. I've had 2 games so far where I've got like the 10 kills straight without dying achievement or medal or whatever you want to call it. So I'm always stoked for that. And I guess briefly, I also kind of been playing, New Super Mario Bros. Wii, just because of IGN's top 100 games of the modern era. And I was like, I don't know why New Super Mario Bros. DS is above the Wii version, but I'm like, it's been like a year.
I don't know how it could be, to be fair, because wasn't the DS one just a remake of the first Super Mario Bros.?
Well, it wasn't a remake, but
the levels were designed off the first Super Mario Bros.
it's debatable. I mean, it has its own original ideas. The thing is, it's like, you take New Super Mario Bros. DS and you move to the Wii, and it changes every, and it improves in almost every regard. So,
and it has,
you know,
multiplayer.
The only, the only thing I could see is that it's one of those things where, oh, this brought back Mario and this only improved on it, but then they have a Portal 2 and they have a Super Mario Galaxy 2 and stuff like that, where it's like, so it's not a, oh, this came first thing, it's more like, oh, which is the better game, and that's New Super Mario Bros. Wii hand down, in my opinion, and I was just replaying it to see if that's still correct, and, you know, just like Mario 1, that game really gives you eyes. I finished the first world, I think I had 21 knives and no deaths.
It may just be you're good at platformers at all. To be fair, well, you do play a lot of them.
Yes, I do.
I think I was on World 3 or 4 before I discovered there was a run button.
I was going to mention that some people didn't know there was a run button in this entire franchise, so...
I don't like Mario games, I'm sorry.
So it seems. But there's two buttons. There's a 1 and a 2. What did you think 1 did?
I don't know. I thought it was just there for decoration. Jesus, I don't know.
So, yes, he had a much tougher time. I'm assuming, you know, if maybe I wanted to challenge myself, I could play it that way by just pressing 2 and not running. I don't know how you make some of those jumps, though.
That's why I died so much. I don't understand. Why can't I make this jump? Oh, that's why.
Uh-huh. But, yeah, it's still a fun game. I've kind of, you know, I've enjoyed it. It's one of my favorite games this generation. But, you know, I'm completely biased towards Mario games, so there's that. So I think that should do it for what we've been saying this week. Before we hit up the news, and, you know, again, there isn't much because we're still in that kind of post-E3, it's the summertime for video games, so nobody cares phase. I would just like to point out that we have two features on the site this week that I, you know, I like to draw attention to. The first is our poll for the best video game opening. Iconic, most memorable, it depends on how you, I decide to word it, but we have a poll up there, there's 44 nominees for that, I took that from, you know, people on Twitter, I took that from people
on the
forums.
Is Bioshock 2 in there?
No, Bioshock 2 was not nominated.
That game was, the opening to that game was awesome. Oh well, I'm going to have to look through it.
Like I said, all the nominees were taken by people who gave it, you know, offered it up, but I didn't want to add or delete anything on my own room. So, like, somebody came to me afterwards, like, why isn't Metal Gear Solid 2 up there? And I'm like, I didn't make this. So, just putting that out there. It was, you know, people gave me these suggestions, and that's what's the list out. The other feature, and this is something I will hopefully try to do once a week for the next 3 weeks, so, yeah, is I'm doing a State of Gaming feature, and this week is on the Sony brand. If you listen to this podcast, you pretty much know how I feel about Sony's...
how everybody feels.
And if you've read your comments, you know how I feel about what you said.
Did you post?
I was the first one, man.
Oh, you're the retarded Microsoft ass-sicker?
Yep, that's me.
Nice. But yeah, so... And, you know, then the next week I'll do Microsoft, and then I'll do Nintendo. Though for Nintendo I might do two, because I feel like the 3DS and the Wii would kind of have their own set of problems that would take up a long amount of time, but we shall see. So yeah, check those two out. Now for stuff that's not related to us, we have news. And we're gonna start with, I guess if we're gonna be negative about Nintendo, we're gonna start with Project Rainfall, Operation Rainfall, which was a movement by Nintendo of America fans to localize three of their major RPG games, Xenoblade, The Last Story, and Pandora's Tower. And I thought it was a novel movement, and unlike some other, you know, online movements, it wasn't just a petition, it was people, you know, people actually got Mondo or Xenoblade to be the number one selling game on Amazon based on pre-orders. They bombarded Nintendo of America's Twitter account and their Facebook. There's going to be a letter sending campaign to send letters to Reggie's that's got Nintendo of America and stuff like that. And throughout all of this, Nintendo of America just said, you know what, screw you, we're not bringing these games over.
I'm not surprised.
I think the biggest issue people have right now, other than Nintendo of America's response, is that right now, okay, for, all right, Xenoblade is confirmed to come out in Europe. That much is confirmed. That story in Pandora's Tower is kind of rumored. I don't think Nintendo of Europe has officially confirmed them, but it's pretty much all but confirmed. So, these games exist already in English. They have English dubs and subtitles and all that. So it's not like they would have to pay an exorbitant amount of money to localize them.
They would just have to reprint the, like, reprint the discs in NTFS for, or NTSC, and then there you go.
They'll probably have to change some wording because you people have to use you way too much. But,
other than that, it's not that big of a deal.
And the other thing is, it's not like the Wii's kind of being bombarded with great games at the moment.
And not only that, is if it's selling on Amazon, if it's going on Amazon, Xenoblade, I think it was.
Yeah.
Then it shows Nintendo that people want these games. You know, they can't say that people don't want them, because they obviously do, which is what Operation Rainfall is all about.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, that's what I thought was going to be the biggest movement here, is the fact that, you know, like, signing an online petition is one thing. Anybody can just kind of sign it and don't, you know, like, you can get your friends to sign it, or you can sign it multiple times.
But actually pledging to buy it on a website.
Yeah,
to sell
that,
I
thought would have been like, oh, you know what, there's an interest here. There's people actually who are pre-ordering this. Maybe we should look into it. And to come out and just say, like, we, you know, like, they haven't, not only that, but they haven't explained it. Now, I don't get mad at companies, because that's really ridiculous, but I am really disappointed that they haven't, you know, they didn't say, you know, we'll consider it, we'll, you know, we'll get back to you in a second on what,
and
you know,
not,
it's just...
Not only that, it's, like, I said I'm not surprised, but Nintendo are known for pretty good customer service a lot of the time. You know?
Well, it's something that IGN's pointed out, and I hate to agree with IGN, is that Nintendo really doesn't have a public face.
No, that's the thing, is that although they have this good customer service, they don't have this face, and I've been saying that they need to have
a Major Nelson. And yeah, that's the thing, is like, their secretiveness works for in their favor at times. I mean, it's one of the reasons why, you know, people always kind of go to the E3s, is because we never actually know what they're working on. But at the same hand, it's kind of frustrating for fans because you never really have anybody to interact with. Nintendo comes out of their shell when they want to come out of their shell. They tell you what they want to tell you, and then they go back in there, and then you don't see it again until they have more words on it. Like Zelda, for instance, we probably won't hear about it again until, like, October when they start showing it, you know, like, oh, it's coming out November so-and-so, and here's the hands-on before the final game ships to you in a couple of weeks for the press.
Well, we don't even need them, this public face, to tell us things about games, because obviously Microsoft don't tell people things that they don't want them to, the public to know. And Sony. Well, Sony will get half their stuff leaked out, but that's not the point.
I was about to say, so does Microsoft nowadays.
But if they just need somebody there to basically sort of provide Nintendo like a voice, and to let Nintendo, somebody like the internals at Nintendo, know what people want, and in this case, these games to be released in the US.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, as a whole, I think I mentioned this on Twitter before, is that I think this kind of speaks not only of Nintendo, but just in general, the attitude towards JRPGs this generation is that when one of the biggest publishers in the world is kind of iffy on publishing them because they don't think they're the market for them, that speaks to how far they have fallen this generation. Because Namco kind of had to have their eggs pulled to get Tales of Grace localized here. And that took something like 3 years. That's not even out until next year.
It's the same. Because if people want to give you money, you do not say no.
Yeah, that was the other thing I found funny, is that there should never come a situation where people are begging to spend money on your product and you're saying no. Even if it's only like 10,000 people want this experience, you give it to them. And I think it would also help with their image in the sense that, you know, like everybody always harps on the fact that Nintendo doesn't create any new IPs. That isn't necessarily true. They don't support new IPs, is the better stuff. And they have 3 new RPGs that they don't want to bring here. And I think, you know, it just kind of ruins that image. Like, yeah, it's Mario, Zelda, Metroid. We'll do those. And anything else, you can kind of stay in Japan. I can understand stuff like Captain Rainbow. That game would have been a really tough sell in Europe and America.
But
RPGs, I mean, we shall see. I hope they change their minds. I doubt it, but, you know, I hope, you know, it comes out in Europe and it does reason be well, and they're like, you know, maybe we should reconsider this. Because they, honestly, there hasn't been a Wii game. I haven't bought a Wii game this year, and there hasn't been a Wii game this year, really, that's worth investing into. I guess the closest one would be Austin Shadow, and that was like the first week of January. So yeah, moving on. There was several big news that came out this week. The other thing, which I thought was kind of special, and it seems everybody has their own view on this, but the Supreme Court ruling about the selling of violent video games. I hate how this has become twisted in the media to mean that, yes, the government now says you can sell violent video games to kids.
Well, the stores don't do it anyway.
That's the point, is that it's something that's already self-governed by a body dedicated to video games. I think people are missing the fact that this isn't saying, oh, you can sell violent video games to kids. It's saying that we can't stop
it's you from not, selling It's not limited
game.
By the law. That's what it
yeah,
is.
It's not like, oh, we can't sell M-rated games in stores. It's just like you still have to be 17 to buy it. That doesn't change. It's just saying that it's not mandated by the state. And it's still, like, you have to be 17 to buy M-rated games. I still get carded when I buy certain games.
It's a strange thing because, obviously, like, the US and, like, your opinions on it and mine will be different because, obviously, in the UK, it's already restricted by law and it has been since forever. So, from my point of view, it doesn't, like, make any difference because... I can't, but like stores can't by law sell me a game that I'm not old enough for.
Yeah.
I can sympathise why people who work in stores would want it to be law because it's easier to say it's illegal for me to sell you this than I can't sell you this because the ESRB says so. Because they could just, you know.
No, I mean, they can say that. I mean, it is still...
But it's easier. Somebody will take, I cannot sell you this because it is illegal for me to do so.
Well, no, I think I could be mistaken, but the Supreme Court case wasn't about, like, not selling... It was about not selling M-rated games in general.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wasn't about saying you can't sell it to kids. It was about selling them in general. And I also find it funny, and this is something that always comes up, is that America's really... I don't want to say pro-violence, but we tend to ignore violence. But anything sexual becomes a crime right away.
It's the thing. Somebody said to me, they didn't understand why violence in video games is pretty much all right, but sex isn't. Considering you will have sex in your life and you would never kill a person.
I hadn't thought about it like that,
but that is genius.
But it's a weird dynamic because Japan's actually like reverse where they glorify sex but they hide their eyes from violence.
Yeah, it's strange. It's very strange how because I mean I wouldn't object to sex in video games just so long as it made sense. Because if you're just gonna throw it in there for the sake of it, then
it's kind of funny because
I remember that was one of the big things with Grand Theft Auto. Sure, you can beat up prostitutes and you can
kill
homeless
Grand
people.
Grand Theft Auto
have...
up until 4 was very juvenile game anyway.
Yeah, but the big thing was the hot coffee, which came out with San Andreas, and it's the same thing with God of War, where one of the big things that people had complaints were was the fact that there was the sex mini game. Even though the guy can rip and kill and cut people in half, it was the fact that there was a sex mini game that got people up in arms about it.
It's a very strange thing that people do. Is they sort of accept these things that are morally wrong in society, but they don't accept things that are actually correct in society and people do all the time. It's very strange.
Yeah, it's a weird society. What can you do? but yeah, I think, you know, and this also, and as much as I hate it.
I think it's an important step, though, because they did say that video games are covered by the First Amendment.
Yeah, I was about to say, this also kind of gives those people who are already kind of high on their horses the justification that video games are now art.
And Ebert was trolling everybody that day.
Yeah.
Did you read some of the things he was saying?
I always saw the one that, like, now...
To be fair, nowadays, when is Ebert not reminding somebody up?
I guess. He's just, after the giant hit bump that he got last time, like, he's just thinking, okay, great, more people are going to look at my website now if I say crazy things.
Yeah, and to be honest, that's how the video game industry works in general.
Yeah.
You just have to look at Kotaku, I suppose.
So, yeah, this, that. Oh, yeah, Kotaku's an awful site.
Yeah, any opportunity we get to take a dig at them, I am down.
Like, I would see, like, they have articles on, like, what's the best boobs in Japan or something stupid like that.
That's not even a real question, come on. Obviously, it's that chick from Ninja Gaiden.
It's not even, it's not a fact about it being a question or not. It's the fact that this is on your video game website as news.
Oh.
Come on, their top article is the top 5 stash pawns in video games. Oh, God. And the sad thing is they're one of the top video game sites on the internet, so.
Unfortunately.
And if you're wondering what that is, that's the sound of journalism dying.
Ah, dear.
Well, in order for it to die, it had to have actually started. I mean,
fair enough.
Let's be honest here. Like, going back to Operation Rainfall, if this was a fan movement, that it should have been something that I think journalists should have been harping on Nintendo at E3 about. And it took fans' dedication to actually get anybody to notice, like, oh wait, they're not bringing these games over. We should jump on this bandwagon and support this cause because it will get us hits. Not because, oh, we want these games, but it's because, you know, fans are kind of really excited about this, so we'll kind of jump on the bandwagon and do it as well. But, I mean, we can have a whole podcast bashing Kotaku and video game journalism.
Can we do that? Like, not today, because we've already wasted so much time, and I need, like, hours to do this, but...
Sure, we'll do it one week.
Well, we don't need to do it. You just look at Kotaku and it speaks for itself, to be fair.
I was going
to
say this. Also, I think, I forget if it's a website or a Tumblr, but there's, like, game journals.
Oh, it's, Game journalists are incompetent fuckwits.
But there's a shorthand version.
Yeah, it's gamejournals.com or something.
So yeah, check. They usually have pretty good.
Usually, yeah. There are times where it can get a bit unreasonable, but other than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like picking out random typos. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I think using the term journalism to refer to the gaming press is a misnomer anyway. Like, a lot of them don't even claim to be journalists. Like,
I think that's how they try and get away with it, though.
Yeah, fair enough. But
I think the term II is enthusiastic press.
Because you could argue that the Guardian is just a blog now. You could argue that BBC News is not journalism; it's just a blog.
Yeah. So again, we can harp on game journalism.
Yeah, but it's always been more criticism than journalism, anyway. I mean. Like,
yeah, but that's
Patrick
the thing.
Lepic,
really...
I would say he's probably a video game journalist.
And he's probably, like, and it's sad, another
person
I find myself agreeing.
The only one that really comes to mind. Like,
I was about to say, the other person who comes to mind, and it hates me to say this, but I find myself agreeing with him way too often nowadays, is Jim Sterling.
I wasn't expecting that one.
I don't know who
that is. He writes for Destructoid. And the thing is, he's like a giant fanboy when he wants to be, but he's also...
A lot
also,
of the time he speaks...
He has no problem calling bullshit on game companies, which a lot of people kind of, you know, they kind of don't want to because you end up with a situation like, was it L.A. Noire or whatever it was, where, like, you know, some reviewers are afraid that if they say something bad that they're going to miss their golden egg. Like, you don't give Modern Warfare a bad review because you don't want Activision to pull support from you in the future. And it's kind of that the give and take attitude in the video game industry that always kind of held it back is that they don't realize that the video game companies depend on them as much as they depend on, you know, the companies. So it's kind of like, oh, you know, we can't say anything bad because then if we don't get preview code for Call of Duty, that's the biggest game franchise out there, you know, that's missing millions of hits because we don't have a preview or exclusive videos of it. So we'll play nice with them. And that's kind of the attitude that's always kind of permeated throughout the game industry. But, back to news. Here's one that's kind of pissed off a lot of people. The Resident Evil Mercenaries, one file, no reset.
Oh, don't get me started on this one.
Well, you have to, or
else
we're not going to talk
about it. So, Resident Evil Mercenaries on the 3DS has one save file, and you cannot... delete it, you cannot start again and overwrite it. Once it's there, it's there. And the worst thing about this is it is a mechanism of slowing down, at least. used sales, and Capcom are not admitting it. They are lying through their teeth about it, and it's ridiculous. Just come out and say it, Capcom. Everybody knows that it is, and yet you're lying about it. It's annoying. They say that they said that it was a technical limitation with the 3DS and that it was just simply not possible. And yet apparently Ocarina of Time lets you have multiple save files and delete them and start again. So, you know.
Maybe it's Nintendo magic. I will say two things on this. One is apparently the Resident Evil Mercenaries isn't the first game on the 3DS to do this. There are, I think, three other ones. I think Super Monkey Ball, Blaze Blue, and some other, I think Asphalt 3D, but, you know, nobody cares about the ass one. The thing is not that the other companies were smart enough not to mention it ahead of time, so people couldn't get outraged about it.
And as much as
it pisses people off, I still kind of prefer this method over Project $10.
Really?
Because,
but this is the problem, Earl, is what happens if you want to start the game again?
And I get that, and I realize that, but I'm just saying, as a whole, as a method, it doesn't screw over new game users. Yes, you can't resell the game, but I mean, at the end of the day, that's not what the video game industry is concerned with. And yes, I get that this whole fixation with the used game industry is just getting really bizarre this generation. But, again, I still kind of prefer it over saying, oh, you have to pay $10 to access part of the game.
Here's the problem, right, is why don't we just use CD keys everywhere?
Hey, that could work.
The PC has no problem, for the most part, with CD keys, right? I mean, yes, the piracy is rampant on the PC, but that's not something you can stop. If you put CD keys on games, I mean, I know it's going to be let's put it this way, right? With Project $10 from EA and from THQ, we already have to technically put a CD key into the game anyway, right?
Yeah.
So why don't you just make it so you need this CD key to play the game in the first place instead of just limiting content? Anyway, PC has been working that way for 20 years. It hasn't been 20 years. Since the mid-90s, right? And I don't understand why they can't do it for consoles. I mean, I know that it doesn't have a keyboard for you to put in key in efficiently, but it's still not impossible.
I was going to say, I would assume that part of it could be that even though the good percentage of them are, not every video game console is actually connected online and being, you know, forced.
Well, a lot of software you have on PC that requires CD keys, you don't need to activate online to use the CD key, so.
Well, I was just going to say, like, then how do you account for people not using the same CD key over again?
But at least you know that there was a legitimate copy in the first place. I mean, it's not going to stop it. If you make it one-time use, so I don't know, somehow. So you make a save file, on the console with that CD key has been used. I don't know,
Because then the problem then becomes, like, let's say you're 360 Red Rings and you buy a new one. Are you screwed? Do you have to buy a new version of the same game you already own? Is that even fair?
I don't know. It's a problem, and
you see, that's the thing, is I don't think it's a problem. I think it's just the video games, they're penny pinching, and they don't realize how much they're screwing over their fans by trying all these methods to get a few extra bucks. At the end of the day, I still think the best policy would be to reward new players, like Gears of War 2 did. You get them, like, maybe exclusive map pack, like the flashback map pack, or the golden weapons, or something. Or, like, you know, the Joker DLC pack in Batman Arkham Asylum. Get new players something like that. You know, it's something that doesn't break the game. It's something that doesn't, like, oh my gosh, you know, like, this is, you know, it unbalances it. It gives you a reason to buy it new, and if you don't want that stuff, you don't have to buy it new. You can buy it used, and you get the same experience. And it doesn't hurt your bottom dollar because you're still getting people buying it new to get the stuff that comes exclusive with the new version. And that's it. I think that's the best solution if they really want to address this problem, is give people a reason to buy it new, not just force them to say that if you buy it used, we're going to screw you over big time.
Here's another idea. So back in the 80s with the Atari 2600, anyone could go and make a game for it. And Activision is a company that started up and did that, just that. And part of the reason for the great video game crash was because if you bought an Activision game on Atari 2600, Atari weren't getting any money for it. So obviously, the Nintendo came along with the NES and just made it so it is now, so if a third party wants to make a game, they have to license it. And why can't we have, I mean, I know that bricks and mortar aren't going to like this, well, anywhere that sells used games aren't going to like this, but if we have it so that if you buy a game used, it's a kind of a portion of the money you pay to, say, GameStop or whatever, goes to the publisher.
You see, it goes to the problem that, like, the frick and mortar stores wouldn't like it, and honestly, I can understand why, because used games are their bread and butter, because it's all profit for them. And it really, like, how would you even keep track of that? Like, I could say I didn't sell any copies of your game used, and there's no way for you to say, haha, you lie, or something like that.
Yeah, it's a very big problem, unfortunately, but I don't think that Capcom are taking the right way about.
I don't think any of
And they could at least be honest about it, to be fair.
I don't think any of the solutions are the right way, but, you know, what can you do? But, sadly, we're gonna have to move on, because we still got a couple of other things to cover. As we hinted at when you were talking about it before, word came out recently about Team Bandai's SAS and cellular working conditions.
Seems to be a very big problem with Rockstar.
Yeah, because the similar stories came out during Red Dead Redemption. Man. I don't think anything like this came out during GTA 4. I could be mistaken, though.
No, I don't think so, but wasn't there a Max Payne? A similar problem with a Max Payne game? I'm not quite sure.
But, yeah, it's, you know, like the problem, well, there's a lot of problems. There's the fact that these people apparently were working 80-hour weeks. They didn't, I forget exactly what it is. I know at the end of the day, it's that they left the company. Most of them got their names taken off the credit. The work conditions were terrible. Pay was, you know. And what kind of sucked is that this is kind of like Australia's first big coming out game, and a lot of them won't be able to put their name on it because it's not in the credits. So even if they wanted to kind of expand, you know, their stake in the gaming industry, is that they won't get credit for it. And I forget his name. Is it McNamara or something like that?
I don't know.
But the head of Team Bandai kind of had a douchey comment, which I don't know offhand. But, you know, it's the sad truth that this happens and this comes up. You know, we've mentioned this come up with Red Dead Redemption and it come up now again. But it's not an uncommon practice in the video game industry to kind of have these stressful work conditions. We've had stories like EA Wives. And like people get fired and you start to hear like these wild rumors about how the working conditions were awful and stuff like that. We've heard similar stories about how like Retro Studios at the beginning was mismanaged and resources were wasted and stuff like that. And the thing is people kind of, it comes up, people get outraged and then they kind of just throw it under the bridge again because, you know, the game's out and it doesn't really concern us anymore. And it's kind of a problem that needs to be faced head on, but I don't think anybody ever wants to, because they, you know, I think everybody realizes that
Are there not any workers' unions for game developers, per se? Because if there isn't, then why not?
I think it's because of the type of industry.
Remember the Hollywood writers' strike.
Yeah. I guess the difference with that is that, and I'm sure that's going to be a game unit at some point, is that there's probably more than enough workers looking to get into the game industry that, you know, if somebody puts up a fuss up against this, start thinking like that, you can easily replace them. I mean, because it's not a, but how many game studios went in the recent years? That means there's hundreds of employees looking for jobs in the video game industry. So if you want to start a union, they'll get rid of you and find a replacement with somebody who doesn't. A union who just wants a job and stuff like that. And it gets worse when you have like video game journalists or whatever who kind of use their journalism career as a jumping off point to get into the game industry. So not only are you competing with people who went to school to, you know, actually learn how to program and develop and stuff, but you're competing with people who are coming in from different avenues taking your jobs and stuff like that. So you kind of want to hold on to it no matter what the working conditions are. So yeah, I mean,
I think this is the quote you were looking for. I'm not in any way upset or disappointed by what I've done and what I've achieved. I'm not even remotely defensive about it. I think if people want to do what I've done to come here and do that, then good luck to them. If people who have left the company want to go out there and have some success, then good luck to them. But if they don't want to do that, if they don't want to do that with me, that's fine too. It's like a musical differences in a rock and roll band, right? People say they want to do it, some don't.
Yeah, like I said, pretty douchey. But, I mean, Ace is honest. He's not denying it or anything. He's just like, it had to be done to get this game out on time, and even then, that was 5 years, so...
Yeah, but there's still, like, there's a thing called tact. And whether it's true or not, and whether it's, like, a legitimate statement or not, doesn't really matter. You just don't say those things. You walk up to someone on the street who's super ugly, and even if they're super ugly, you don't walk up and tell them that kind of thing. Right?
Yeah,
it's a pretty good analogy.
But right? It is, but I was about to say, you know, it's like, a lot of people in the video game industry aren't really tactful, and I guess it's kind of that nerd stereotype. But, I mean, you got people like David Jaffe and Kiffy B who are kind of obnoxious loudmouths.
David Jaffe is my favorite developer ever, by the way.
Jaffe is, I kind of like David Jaffe, because he's obnoxious, but not in a bad way, as far as I'm concerned, whereas Cliffy B is obnoxious in a bad way.
You see, again, it's the same
David,
idea.
David Jaffe is different to Cliffy B because Cliffy B feeds off the attention he gets. He complains about it, but he feeds off of it as well. Whereas David Jaffe is just David Jaffe.
Yeah, and there's other ones, but yeah, I think, there aren't a lot of, I want to say, graceful speakers in the video game industry, and I think part of it is because they realize how passionate their fans are, and nothing gets people riled up more than a good juicy quote. And it brings you attention, and really, it's free advertising. Who would you say is the most humble or graceful speaker in gaming?
Oh, I don't know. Miyamoto, maybe?
Yeah.
It's hard because he doesn't really speak English, so...
Yeah, I was about to say, it's kind of hard with him because most of his stuff is translated, so he could be calling everybody a douche, and they're like... We just want to leave that part out. I was going to say Iwata because I always enjoy hearing him talk because he's a very intelligent man. And he doesn't really take pot shots at people.
Iwata just says it as it is.
Reggie takes pot shots. Yeah. And, you know, most people at Sony get trained in taking pot shots.
That marketing campaign is based on pot shots, let's face it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't really dig that guy at Microsoft too much. Mr. Smiley, Don Matrick.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't like Don Matrick at all.
But what else do we have? Oh, speaking of Sony, they apparently confirmed that Sorcery is still in the works.
I was worried.
I was worried.
Don't worry, the five people out there that have Move, you'll get your game.
Eventually. Well, I mean, you always get Medieval Movement, which looks like a really... Let's not talk about Medieval Movement. I think I said enough negative things about Sony on this week. then there's rumors of GoldenEye Reloaded being registered by Activision. People are suggesting that this is either an HD remake of GoldenEye Wii or a 3DS version of GoldenEye Wii. I'm hoping it's a new version of GoldenEye on the Wii, but I doubt that.
The name wouldn't suggest that it's a new one.
Well, that it depends because it would be like GoldenEye Rogue Agent, where it's kind of like an unofficial sequel to GoldenEye.
Maybe
because for some reason there's 22 films in a franchise, but everybody seems to be stuck on this one. So
that's because it was the only one to generate a good game.
Yeah,
that's not true.
Yeah.
Everything or Nothing's a fantastic game. World Is Not Enough game isn't too bad. But, you know, if GoldenEye Wii was called anything else, it's still a fantastic first-person shooter. I think it's kind of like we won't go into it. But, yeah, I am kind of curious to see what this is. I personally hope it's not an HD remake, because nothing drives me crazier in this world than when somebody says, oh, I was just about to buy this game. Good thing they announced it for this system. Heck yeah, if it's been out for a year and you haven't bought it yet, you weren't just about to buy it. You were waiting for this announcement, and you just wanted to sound like, oh yeah, you know, I had this on the back burner this entire time.
Not to mention the last thing we need is more HD remakes, especially coming from Activision. We'll have one a year.
I'm actually surprised.
And then we'll have Activision saying that there's not a market for it anymore.
I'm actually surprised Activision hasn't jumped on. Like, I didn't realize until this week, Activision hasn't really done any like Xbox Live Arcade or PSN titles.
No, they haven't. But how can you make an Xbox Live Arcade or PSN title out of Call of Duty?
Well, they did. They had Call of Duty Classic, which is like Call of Duty 1.
Other than that.
Then you release Call of Duty 2.
Well, that's already out on Games on Demand. All the Call of Duty is up to Black Ops. They're on Games on Demand already, so...
Is Big Red 1, which is also an awesome name.
I don't know about Big Red 1, but...
Uh-huh. But yeah, what else do we have to talk about? I think that's... Oh, finally, there's two more... Well, one rumor, and then, you know... We'll end on the other thing. The rumor that Crysis is coming to Xbox 360 and PS3. I was always under the impression that Crysis wasn't a special game, it's just a graphically pretty game.
Crysis is a... I know, it's a Marmite game. In the sense that you either love it or you hate it. I personally, I hate it. I don't see how they would bring it to the 360 and the PS3, because they removed a lot from Crysis to
put make it
on
work.
The console.
Yeah.
Like, who knows? The maps on Crysis, like, were huge. They were massive. And they streamlined the control scheme, so, like, in Crysis 1, you actually have 5 different suit powers instead of 3.
D-pad it.
What? There's only 4 buttons on the D-pad.
D-pad it. Well, one would be current, well, and then the other 5 would switch automatically.
I mean, and, so I don't understand how that would work, and I'm not sure there would be many people that would buy it.
You'd be surprised at how many people would rebuy the same game.
Well, I'm not talking about... No, because PC gamers will not rebuy Crysis on a console. They will
not do it.
But I'm not sure how many PC gamers...
PC gamers aren't the majority.
Well, no, but I'm not sure if there will be many console gamers out there willing to pick up the first Crysis.
I mean, the second Crysis so decently, but nothing special. So who knows? We shall see. And finally, is that Viz has picked up the right for the Professor in film and in North America. I believe you folks already have that in Europe.
I don't know whether it's. It might be. I've seen it. I've seen it in English. So
is it any good?
It's all right. They managed to put the whole puzzle solving thing into it quite nicely.
Oh, that's nice. No, I hope it's not as odd as it is in the game where you're talking to somebody like, I heard this puzzle the other day.
No, because you actually have Leighton and I forget his
name. Luke.
Yeah, Luke. And they're actually interacting with people, and they it's easy to have them in a situation that is in a movie than it is in a puzzle game on a DS. So.
Yeah, I just always find it funny, like, oh, if you want to get further in this train.
And I have to say, after watching that movie, Professor Layton is a man. He's very good at sword fighting.
Professor Layton's awesome.
I'm not a fan of the games, but I quite like the movie.
I like the games, and you probably shouldn't say that to Al before Anthony comes and haunts you in your dreams.
Oh, they made my brain hurt. That's mainly because why I don't like them.
That's the point of them. They're puzzle
like,
games.
They make my brain hurt, and then I quickly lose my patience.
Fair enough. But yeah, I know Anthony swears by them, and I enjoy them, so. So, I mean, I think that should do it. I guess we have anything else to bag on. I mean, we can make fun of game journeys again.
So, here's one thing. Gears 3 was leaked, and I know this is rather hypocritical of me, but I hate it when people report when games are leaked, especially the AAA ones. Because
it seems awfully counterproductive, doesn't it?
Well, A, games are leaked all the time, and B, it's like they're just saying, right, it's out there, go and download it as much as you want. You know?
Yeah, it's
a public service announcement. It's not report, it's a public service announcement.
And I also like the fact that they'll say it and they're like, oh, it's available on all your favorite torrent sites.
Yeah. Oh.
Like, oh, just in case you didn't know where to get it.
Yeah. And this is the thing, is if you don't know what a torrent is, it's been mentioned, and then you just go, what is torrent?
Yeah.
And then you'll find out, and then you'll learn how to use them, and you go, oh, I'll download that now.
And I'm sure we all catch the irony in making fun of this while giving people the idea of how to download this on torrent sites. So.
just reported enough already, so there's nothing...
Yeah, just to be clear, if you want to download Gears of War 3, you can go to torrent sites.
It's not complete, by the way. It's not complete.
It's the purpose copy.
I already had to tell one person to not spoil it for me.
Great, so now there's even more people playing Gears of War 3 right now when I can't or ever.
And I would also like to point out that the last time something like this happened, Microsoft ended up banning like a million consoles. So
I got hold of Modern Warfare 2 before the release date, actually. It was quite funny because they were well pissed off. It's like, well, don't torrent the game then.
Yeah, so just remember that when you're doing this. This isn't Sony or Nintendo who will come up with a firmware update to kind of, you know,
Microsoft
tease.
Will ban your ass.
They will ban you, your Xbox, and make it so you can't get any achievements or go on Xbox Live Arcade, Xbox Live anymore. Yeah. So keep that in mind and realize if any game area is worth it to not use that system again.
My last hope for playing Gears is that it comes out on PC, which...
That won't happen.
Not going to happen.
Epic have already clear that they don't care about the PC anymore.
Why don't you just get your Xbox fixed?
Because that's too expensive.
Then why don't you buy a new one?
Because that's more expensive.
I was going to say, put your old one in the box, return it to the store, say it doesn't work, and get a refund.
No, they don't do that.
They write down
the little code. There's a little window so you can see the serial code on it, and they write that down. Because that's what I was going to do last time my Xbox broke, and then they got me.
Is yours a fat Xbox per se, Chad?
It's like, yeah.
So here's what you do, right? Does it red ring when you turn it on?
No.
Does it give you the E74?
It doesn't do either of those.
So what you do is if it's
just time out.
Time out. I say I'm going to wrap this and then we can talk about this off the air. So for Chad, Dan, you, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 37.
Don't put words in my mouth.
Okay, are you not saying goodbye?
I'm not saying goodbye. I don't like these people.
Okay, for Daniel and myself.
I'll be the same.